We've got a great turnout tonight. First on the list, Mr. Peter Goldman.
Wild swans. Wild swans, the enchanted sons of kings, hiss. Shall we never see the star heart of any mountain again? Not until 300 years have passed. The wild swans of Cool Park, on the lock at Cork, running, flapping to take off. Princes trying to escape their enchanted swan bodies, forms stretching, nascent kings locked in their bird bodies, never to be free. And this second one's about a rock formation at the end of Skye, which is called MacLeod's Maidens. And the legend associated with that is these are the three Norse fates, the Valkyries. And so I was investigating the legend, and the legend, the fate of man and the fate of mankind, if you like, and I couldn't just leave it in the past. I had to link it to the future and the present day and what's happening in my home and the state of the world and everything. So it's called the MacLeod's Maidens, the North Fates on Skye. And I own a little bit of Scotland. I own 1 square foot of an island. I can't do anything on it, but I... Anyway, it's lovely to know that fact. Out on the Isle of Clet, to the left of Wattanish, up Dunvegan Way, on Skye, Éilean na Chaill, the misty isles of Scotland in the Inner Hebrides, is my piece of Highland Island, 1 foot square, the title deed given to me by my daughters on Father's Day. Skye is the island of music, myths and legends. Skye is the home of the Norse legends, the Valkyries, the deciders of future and fate, the choosers of the slain, the riders of the storm. They are the Nornir, the old Norse fates. These three maidens are Urd, fate or the past, Verdandi, being or the present, and Skuld, necessity and the future. They dwell by the well of fate, from which they draw magic water to feed Yggdrasil, the ash tree of the world, whose branches reach the sky and cover the earth, giving life, and whose roots go to the realm of the dead, home of frost, the giants, and the world of mortals. The largest of the maidens is the mother, Niflheimr Mór. My Gaelic's not so good. Anyway. And she is said to be perpetually weaving, knitting like Madame Defarge at the guillotine, in shape not unlike statues of Queen Victoria sitting, while one daughter pulls and thickens, two of whom spin the threads, which are the lives of men. The other daughter does nothing at all, for she is blind, except she cuts them when she chooses, for she is blind, fate. They choose the best and bravest of the slain, and lead them to Valhalla, the long house of heroes' happiness, which has 540 doors. They attend these heroes with golden cups of wine, and they feast eternally on the great boar, Sakrima, which is whole again each morning. Some say the chief maiden is Ran, wife of the Norse godling Ogier, or Hlug Agjog, who lifts up his hoary head from the waves and calls up storms. When Ran saw this sign, she made ready and fished for sailors, whose spirits she imprisoned, like them, trapped in stone. Evil spirits, these rocks, MacLeod's maiden, wrecker of ships, the friend of the blue men of the Minch. Perhaps they are shadows, these rocks, three basalt columns that rise up out of the sea, at whose feet the mermaids sit with the seals, Celia combing her hair on the rocks below the maidens. Very few see them, and woe to them that hear their sirens call. Three basaltic columns rise sheer from the Minch at the end of Junish on the edge of Skye. The maidens were weaving their dreadful web of death upon a loom of lances. and the weights of the looms were men's heads. As they wove, they sang. Horror covers all the earth. Clouds of carnage block the sun. Sisters weave the web of death. Sisters cease. The work is done. A song they sing in the flooded Hunter Valley this year, in Sri Lanka, in Iraq, in Aceh, Kerala, Kashmir, and New Orleans. Environmental disasters overwhelming us in a tsunami of climactic tragedy. Thousands drown or are crushed in an instant. The tangible reality washes away. Around the whole world, the sirens are singing the Delta blues, sad songs. Nature showing us who is really boss. And the trilogy of liars, fakers, and fools rules, while good people everywhere grind their teeth in disgust. That song was last heard on Sky in 1014. The song ceased then, and Scottish crofters saw the Valkyries tear the web in two, and the sky darkened under the shadow of all 12 Valkyries hovering on their swan's wings. Some flew to the north, some to the south, denoting the rending of the old Norse faith, conquered by Christianity. They fled over the edge of the world on the horizon. There is no record of the Valkyries ever being seen on the sky again until today, when they fly like lost swans, uneasy with the wind, wild on the world. Three coal ships adrift on Nobby's Beach. Sigma storms again in Newcastle. These maidens remain, cliffs against the sea, remembering a Norse warning and a legend tale to tell. Or so some say, up aye, climactic change today est.
Thanks very much, Peter. That's great. Next up to the microphone, Miss Anne-Marie Granfield.
Right. This poem that I'm just about to read, I wrote this shortly after a neighbour of mine, she died of breast cancer. So just to let you know what it's about. Death and life. Death is strange. I've noticed that no matter the illness, no matter the age, they all die the same. They lay there, then without warning, they take a deep breath, and then silence. The room grows quiet, the trees sway outside the window, and your heart breaks as the family tears and screams fill the air. All they want is their loved one, they can't believe this has happened. Then, as the days go on, they finally see their loved one resting on the ground, knowing it's forever. Crowds form the graveyard like a black carpet, with tears and sadness filling the atmosphere. Then, after they have gone, the earth covering them over, it's finished, it's no more. All that is left is merely a headstone bearing their loved one's name. It's strange. Death comes, takes who it wants, then slowly moves away. Life continues, but it's with great sadness and broken hearts. Life changes. Life shows us a completely different world after, but still with the eerie feeling of death nearby. Eventually, though, you find a light or an understanding, your heart starts to heal, and the gap that was once there finally starts to fill. Okay. This next one is An Angel at Your Side. A softness you can't describe, a caress you can't explain, a touch of love your heart can't comprehend, a feeling of warmth, a feeling of protection. An angel at your side, a lifetime of fighting to strive, to live, to learn, to be you, to be born. An emotion of strength, a feeling of light and darkness, a smile when your soul is sad, an art when you open your eyes. An angel in the skies, an angel by your side.
Thank you, Anne-Marie. Next on the list, we have Mr. Gene Barry.
Hi. I'm going to read a poem here called The Gas Man. I don't know, do many of you remember The Gas Man? The Gas in Cork City and Limerick, I presume, as well. The Gas Man, prior to having a bill that would come in the post from the gas company, you had a meter under your stairs and you put the money into it, and the gas man would cycle around unannounced and count this money in front of you, and you always got a little bit back, but you never knew how much. And there were seven of us, there were seven children, so it was very important what was given back. So I call it the gas man. She knew without question that it was Mary who directed him along her tangent. Someone had caught sight of the custom-built black bike. His aged brown bag led him through his introduction. Her emotional recruits, masked by Oscar-winning pretense, and he, her Afghan light, with a baggins bow, vanished where candles were not to be lit for fear of gas leaks under our stairs. The key to relieving worry was produced and quickly opened the treasure box. Please God, my mother whispered beneath her staring jewelry. Silently she prayed. A virulent glow I cast his way as copper and silver prints of greyhounds, bulls, and the royal family decorated our formica table. Leisure the more, I contemplated as long, dirty, hairy fingers built towers you'd see in shops and made pencil calculations in the wrinkled red jotter. I watched a biased referee, a pursuance of recruits stacked unfairly entering his playground, while stage left in a ruse she entertained the sink. Politely he postulated, one hour and she listened, with casual-like pretense, blind to the stack he left behind, and open to his amnesty. She locked the outside world away, retrieved her smile, and fed her starving alveoli. From the doldrums, she dredged her dignity. Longing for a pair of comforting arms, she smiled and planned as she removed the coppers from our mobile safe that was her slipper. We banged the upturned pots with childish joy, plunged ourselves into her happiness, and off to the shop Jim went for Tritone biscuits. Thanks. This is a poem I wrote a couple of years ago at my daughter's graduation up in UCC, and it was a hugely emotional day for me. So I call it Gradienus Igitur, which is the student's merit. Jeremiah Clark beckoned volunteers in absentia, gradus honorabilum baccalaureus in arbitus. Awareness severing scores of outdated umbilical cords, sandaled little feet, tiny hands, now encased in tans, pounds, and gowns, my stomach a tinderbox, a joyful host of butterflies on parade. Your name a tide of joy, I hold your childhood hand, Martis de Tenon, and guide you up another set of steps, releasing you to the world of adulthood and learning. Bless you, woman, friend, joy maker, disciple of fairness, northern light of possibilities. Go now and celebrate you. Thank you. Read a short one here. It's called Mac Barra. He was well placed at the edge of the concrete riser. It would only be a blind Jarvie that would mess with him. He massaged his objective Mount of Venus and maneuvered his Philidae Taurus in the direction of the oncoming traffic. Earlier he had placed himself in neutral, his inner workings already on their way and pulling him impatiently. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Jean, for that. Next up, could we please give a welcome to Mary O'Connell.
Hi everybody. Well, we've had a feast from the Limerick poets, so, and I wanted to hear other people, so I'm just going to read one. Okay. Testing. Okay. This is called Visitation, and it's for a member of the audience who himself will know who he is when I sing or say it. Visitation. Birdman appeared, kingfisher blue and red, flitting into a space between daylight and dusk. Don't close the door in my face. I opened it wide. I felt the breath of his wings and led him aloft. He gave me a coin, 3 stupas, shading Ganesha, elephant god from the east. Perched on a chair, he told me his dreams, filled the room with his song, lurched, swooped, and spun. He spoke of the journeys he'd planned. My crumbling logic fell at his feet. I watched as he turned, stirring the air, while he opened a way for his flight. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Our next guest is here for the first time this evening, but very well known in poetry circles and responsible for bringing us our 3 guest readers this evening. So it's really great to be able to bring up to the microphone Mr. Dominic Taylor.
Thanks, Paul. That's great. I don't know how well known I am in the poetry circles, so. Infamous, maybe. Well, not known for the poetry anyway. So. I suppose, as Paul said, I'm from Limerick. I suppose I'd start off with a little poem about one of Limerick's most venerable institutions, or maybe least venerable, depending where you're coming from. The confraternity, and the Limerick confraternity is famous, I suppose, and everybody who was anybody was a member. So this is a little poem called Confraternity Night. Every Friday night, we made our way up to the Fathers for the weekly confraternity. Friday night was boys' night, and we were the young recruits, cannon fodder for the booming, sonorous voice of the priest in full battle cry. We hadn't a chance, or so they thought. But just like a traumatized body was shut down to protect itself when in danger, so also did we, and as a consequence, lived to fight another day. Thank you. Noel has a poem in the book there about visiting London for the first time, and he says that they were the first generation to wear shades as of right. But I'm a bit older than Noel, and I went in probably a generation before him. And we left because we didn't have to go, but we did because we wanted to have a bit of more fun. And I suppose it's the fun of going someplace when you're not really prepared for going. You know, you do it before you're ready, like standing up here. And it's also called fear, I suppose. So this is a little poem about leaving Limerick for the first time and going to London. It's called Exodus. We followed in the footsteps of stone-hard men, although more an adventure than necessity, the same pang of homesickness and gut-wrenching panic was there. After the loneliness of the mail boat from Dunleary to Holyhead, carrying its well-stamped cargo to the building sites of England, we inhaled the smells and sounds of a new country on that long, dark journey to Euston. Too early for the first train to Kilburn, we lingered at the station and watched London rise from its sleep. Later, running in the bright morning sunshine from along Kilburn High Road to Quex Road and Sanctuary, grasped at the familiar accent, began the frantic search for a job before the day was out. Unable to eat, stomachs full with anxiety, aching for home. Thank you. A few years ago there, we had the nursing home scandal. This is a little poem I wrote at the time. I never really finished it, and I haven't got a title for it, so it's still untitled. But this is what it's like at the moment, anyway. The TV screen flickers with blank faces, broken bodies herded together into secret places, made ready for the final slaughter. Someone's son here and there, someone's daughter. While all the time circling, keeping order, the guards, their cutting voices like barbed wire against flesh in this geriatric creche. Moved from chamber to chamber, no resting place of bliss, no refuge for what is left after life's labors. And here, a girl in a picture postcard kiss, now strapped to a restraining chair, and from her eyes, through the tangled matted hair, a plea for kindness and embrace, as the dream becomes a nightmare in this final resting place. Thank you. I'll just finish with this little poem. It's about unrequited love, and it's called Silence Talking. I say nothing, because I want to say I love you. I talk about the weather, what's on the telly, anything except us. And because I fear this threat of silence, I babble on incessantly in a superficial way. And though I long to confess, I'm blasé and say what I don't mean. And when you look me in the eye and we're up close but apart, almost as if we agreed to be aloof. But in between this crosstalk and lack of dialogue, I say I love you in 100 meaningless ways. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Dominic. Next up on our list we have regular Mr. Pat Cotter.
Less. Two poems. St. Catherine of Siena. She was, it was a Hello magazine in the 13th century. St. Catherine of Siena would never have been out of it. She was the it girl of her time. Influential among kings and bishops and cardinals and popes. The main reason she was influential is because she told everybody she had these visions where she saw Jesus Christ and everybody believed her. And in these visions, Jesus was just dripping, gushing blood all over the place. He's like a walking blood transfusion service. And during one of these visions, Jesus Christ actually married her and presented her with a ring of very scarce material that was cut away from his body as an infant when he was circumcised. And for this she received total admiration from the men in power of her day. So I figured if she could travel through space to meet Jesus, she could also travel through time. So this is about St. Catherine of Siena's ecstatic vision of her marriage at Grabawl Bay near Crossavon, County Cork. In Grabawl Bay that day, the mist intruded from the sea, briny, opaquing the air. A smoothened shard of glass worn by the rubbings of sand, the tramplings of crustaceans, the swirling embraces of the waves, glinted like an eye, until like a swallow through a cloud, it vanished unexpectedly mid-tidings. With a troop of winged trombonists hovering patiently by his side, Gabriel's feathers fluttered and suffocated like leaves. I found myself slightly uneased. For my matrimonial march, the mist parted like a cloud. The angel trombonists heralded my steps. The horns of Roach's Point and the Inishfallen boomed heartily out, while gulls and guillemots shrieked wildly in celebration. Not for an iota of eternity did I doubt my lover would come, wound brandished for all to see. When he did arrive, I sang my song. My Lord Bridegroom's blood is honey to my kisses. From his shredded heart is fashioned my bouquet. His suffering expression makes me seek with pleasure. His kindness, forgiveness, enrich my soul to slay. King Solomon himself composed the prayers, we would say. Your love is more beautiful than wine. Your name is an oil poured out. Draw me in your footsteps, let us roam, etc., etc. I, myself, so beautiful and resplendent, some local girls mistook me for the Blessed Mary. A little boy ran round and round a rock in some mocking dance, until tripping he split his head upon the stone, letting his blood gush out to the Calvary. Seal our marriage, delicately, my Lord Bridegroom fitted around my waiting finger a holy band of covenant, not a band of tarnished silver or tainted gold, but a malleable band of his holy flesh, sliced since infancy. The local peasantry was much impressed. A place of pilgrimage was what they made this place. A beach where little boys peed in the sea, where the Blessed Virgin was remembered to have worn the holy prepuce. St. Catherine of Siena, St. Catherine of Brabourne, St. Catherine of Siena, St. Catherine of Crosshaven. Siena is more euphonious than Crosshaven, but Crosshaven is more sacred than Siena. The singing Bichon. My dog sings arias, but only to me. Mahler's Kindertoten Lieder he knows imperfectly. The In Paradisum of Fauré's Requiem he renders with a strong nasal strain. He can't quite reach all the notes of Purcell's The Pliant, but hey, he's just a dog. He began to sing when I began to ignore him. Neither of us can stand the other's company. When he shakes his Bichon curls, doggy wits tinged with bitter fermentations assault the upper reaches of my nostrils. His piss perfumes the corners of my living room with a pungency made worse by the addition, without obliteration, of the mop bucket's ammonia-based floor fluid. I can't stand him because he smells. He can't stand me because I'm impervious to his plaintive, glistening eyes. Regularly, we each need to elude the secret inner lives of our separate solitudes. I by listening to my music, he by stepping outdoors to sniff the arses of other dogs, or to beg attention of passing children. After I ignored his whines to be let outside, he learned to sing. That first night, I could not avoid paying attention to his original interpretation of Raphael Courteville's Creep, creep, softly creep. I released him. He arse sniffed. The following night, I ignored his Courteville, and he sang something by Durafle. I once tried to arrange a soiree where I planned to accompany him on cello, my living room to Bijou for the pianoforte. But with a house full of guests, he had no solitude to escape and no need to sing. He doesn't know I know he sings Rufus Wainwright when he thinks I'm not around. Smelly bastard.
Thank you, Pat. Next up to the microphone, please. Could we have a welcome for Mr. Jerry Murphy?
Actually on the phone to Pat last night and the dog was barking in the background and Pat was saying, shut the fuck up, you little bastard. So arias, you can read it out loud if you like. I mean,
no, just read it yourself.
All right.
It's
a short one.
Could you do the first bit again, please, Jerry?
Next. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Jerry. You know, that's a bit of plagiarism going on there. Not 45 seconds of silence, was it?
Yeah, 4 minutes 33 seconds.
Okay. Thanks for that. Next up to the microphone, please, Mr. Fabio Mele.
Good evening. Last week I was in Scotland, so I wrote two pieces about that beautiful land. The first one is Green Lands of Scotland. A rumor is spreading since so long. Green Lands of Scotland, secluded place for lonely attendees, can be very dangerous. I raise my hand, I move it, I capture the attention of that pale and mysterious man being my servant tonight. I admire this liquid, amber colored and sparkling. I drink it all in one go. I wonder if it will be the only one, but I know me. The answer is there will be many others. After a heartful Scotch whiskey, I taste a magnificent, refreshing and enjoyable lager. I don't need wondering if this will be the first. Sorry. The answer is too obvious. 1, 2, 3. Dance the shadows of this obscure room, fastly move the lights, and lamps contribute at the mass. A song raises in the silence, an old traditional song. The elder men slightly move their lips under their long moustache. The younger ones raise their pints and scream aloud, long life to the life going away. I feel ever more far in these vibrations. The world, as I could touch, is unreachable by now. I'm dying, I think, as though thinking is not a logic attitude in these circumstances. I stand up from a stool, or a fall, I just can't remember. I go towards the gateway. As a horse, I raise my arms to create some blinkers. All moves, talks, and sounds. All is a torment. Look up now, those yellow lights. Can I only look at them? All happened later on. I can't remember anymore. Thank you. The second one is Water of Lace. Great expectation beyond the river. Oh, Lace, you have been flowing, slow and grave, for many millennia. Don't halt at old bridge. Through the wood, there is something waiting you. A sylvan path, a green carpet for your toes. Raise your goblet, even for me, O courteous Aegea. Escape madness, and hide me from deathly snake assaulting you. Under your porch shades, that earthly peace, that I will lose soon, crossing bridge's arch of dim terrace, leaving me again in the crowd, a minute, still a minute. Thank you.
Thank you, Fabio. Next on our list, we have Mr. Antonio Boccino.
Hello, I apologize for my English pronunciation. I tried to write something to stop thinking of my present, my past, or even my future. I tried to put some words down, heavy words, my creatures, at least in the precise moment I whispered them. Two words like beginning and end, followed by others and others, to create an image, a sound, a sequence of never-ending points that rest on the emptiness of a paper and linked up by an unfinished sense as the light breaks the darkness scattering among the arch and the fluted columns of this temple that I love return to observe during the summer, just before the sunset, when even clamors and thrill of the day seem to offer a break and softly calm down stunned by long and fierce hours of blistering heat. I tried to write something over the shining moon that filled the sky last night, as my friend suggested me waiting lazy the bus after rushed and punctured work. I tried to write something on your beer, but surely your best poets wrote and write on it better than me. And so, as the good Italian that I am, I tried to write something on the wine. But after lyric poets from ancient Greece and old Christ Latins, I don't think it's a good idea. So I try not to write anything at all. I have been trying for months to write a poem. Maybe I have to definitely give it up. But at least for these 2 minutes, I've been able to start thinking of my present, my past, or even my future. Thank you. I'm going to read the last one in Italian first. Amo i tuoi occhi e li vedo come da lontano, indietro, ripercorrendo i miei giorni sin dove non ci sono luoghi e nomi e tempo. I love your eyes and I see them beyond the distance, running through my days again, till where I can find places, names and time. Thank you, Antonio. Next on our list for the evening, we have Sinead Ryan.
Sorry. This one is called Heart Flowers. In my mind every day I remember the memories like the scent of flowers never forgotten. Flowers sown in the heart never die. A bunch of roses, so beautiful for a while, is merely a thing, a passing scent that quickly fades. Who needs roses when heart flowers are yours? This one is called Death Sentence. A little life to start today with a future fresh and sweet. Blue eyes, little fingers, a little flower but a lily, soft and pure. Lilies on a baby's bed, wreaths around her little head. Soft innocence, but the doctor said that before she turned 10, she'd be dead. And this last one is called She. She lived life like each day was somehow better than the last one. She always smiled. She could make you laugh at nothing. On the darkest day, she'd find a rainbow. From the blackest well, she'd draw a bucket of happiness. She was the keeper of the light over the sea of those she loved.
Thank you, Sinead. We have a lot of Italian poets here tonight, so I hope I get the pronunciation ready. Right. For the next poet, whose name I think is Nicolena Ingenito.
Nicoletta.
Nicoletta Ingenito. Scusi. Nicoletta.
I'm not a real poet, and it's just the very first poem I wrote, and it's called We Will Meet Again, and it's written in Dublin on June the 3rd, 2007, and it's dedicated to the living memory of my beloved father, Vincenzo, who died last year on June the 11th. We will meet again. I know for sure that we will meet again one day. I strongly believe that since you left, you keep on living inside of me, in my heart, in my veins, in my mind, in my brain. And it's not just a belief, it's something that I really feel. 1 year has passed and flown away since you left and passed away. and you did it so quietly that only a deep and deafening silence has filled my lonely days since you passed away. I still remember vividly the last time we talked, your big hands strongly holding mine, telling me about your life. I was acting normally and completely unaware of what was going to happen. But you did feel something strange. Above all, when you realized you could not remember properly your favorite poem. The same poem you still used to know by heart, probably the previous day. The same poem you helped me to learn by heart when I was a little child. At that very moment, I looked at your sweet face deeply, and I was scared. We were both scared. But once again, I was blind by unawareness. If only I could have known that that was our last talk. How many things I would have told you. How many kisses I would have given you. How strongly I would have hugged you and held your big hand. I love you, my dear dad. The strongest and sweetest dad I could ever have imagined for my life. You, a God's gift, who is now a peace in my heart, the sweetest peace. You live in my memories, and I know that every step I take, you're always close to me. I've achieved today the poem you left unachieved that day. We will sing it heart by heart one day when I know for sure we will meet again. Thank you.
Nicoletta. Next, I hope I can get this one right as well. Carmela and Arumna.
Good evening. This is a short poem called Mirror. That's the same trick again, rhythms in the mind, words in the heart. Mirror of a bygone time, placed with care in a whole attic. Mirror of departed eyes, of kidnapped hands, mirror on a wall, mirror on that wall of stone and steel, on ropes and nails, of anger and thirst, of dream, of awakening. Thanks.
Thank you, Carmela.
Okay.
And next up to the microphone, could we please have a welcome for Annie Power?
This first one is about a breakup again, and it's basically just about to start breaking up with somebody and kind of just wallowing in self-pity basically. It's called Coming to Terms. I lie to myself all the time because deceiving hurts less than believing that you and I are nothing more than a case of awry misled timing. I tell myself I'm over you. I close my eyes passing your house and don't read your letters anymore. I'm happy if I don't think of you till lunchtime, until I realize I thought of you at dawn. When sleep wore off and you poured in to drown me with your smile, your eyes, and that boyish cocked eyebrow of yours that always made me groan, then laugh. Not thinking of you fills my day, and not loving you fills my life with a heartbreak that is pure and undeniable. This one is called The Judge, and it's about my dad. He's a farmer, and it's just supposed about back in the day when we used to think that him getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning and calving season was fun for him instead of actually putting food on the table, and it's called The Judge. The three of us hold court in the kitchen around a table made for 8, and I try to pay attention to my father's words, but I'm startled by him, by how he suddenly appears. He's once black hair, peppered with sprigs of fast fleeting grey and futuristic white. His face marred by wild winter nights I slept through, with the denial of reality available in childhood, for a limited period only. He stirs the sugar bowl with a spoon as he talks, and a sour taste ripens in my mouth, by remembrance of strong hands, stern words, and eyebrows arched, bent and black. Thank you.
Next up, we have Mr. Seamus Harrington.
Dominic had a poem earlier about nursing home. This one, similar to the title, I don't. Cocooned in a gown of dragons, staring, he sits in the hallway, right thumb on a rim, Morricone fading away from the remote day room TV. The other one, cumbersome, dissecting his cardigan, a sandaled foot on each wrist, a waft of brown soda, pungent and poignant as cordite. Unaware of the danger, a patron at peace with the world, plods between the park chairs, puckers his lips, pockets a tissue of teeth. Kaleidoscopic wall hanging, the stained slash of sunlight, seraphic, sacred and silent. Unblinking, they face one another. Who'll draw that first bead? 20 chrome revolutions apart, Derringer's still trousered. A clumsy bedpan bongs clear as an angelus bell, two right hands lift as one. Them Mondays every week, they always take their toll. I'll nick another fag, I swear I won't inhale. The kettle lost its whistle, this press is always bare. My phone is out of credit, it's going to snow, I'm sure. That toaster is cremated, the TV's on the blink. The fridge won't even neigh, my mind's a morning blank. Clock cuckoos in a coma, observe his vacant gaze. No hand will rise past 8. Where did I drop my keys? My bike's most likely flat. My feet are freezing cold. Tap water looks like tea. Can't make a cup of scald. The cold ceramic hob reminds me of that bill. Fridge magnets wink at me. The sink, of course, is full. The mixer's round the bend. Dang microwave won't ding. The end, the claim is nigh. And who's to say they're wrong? So birthdays come and go, but what's another year? An avalanche of clothes and not a stitch to wear. Percussion in my brain, transceiving my remorse. It's time to play my part, the back to bed recluse. Dot, 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 dash, 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 dot, dot, dot. That's SOS. Again and again, faint but clear. Clear as the luminous frost. Clear as the starry heavens. The message repeated in hope. Repeated in hope. Repeated in hope. Message repeated in hope. Much, much too late for too many. Yet due to Morse code, hundreds of souls are plucked from the icy brink. From the icy brink, from the icy brink, plucked from the icy brink. Again, Marconi's newfangled device responds in disbelief to the rescue. In disbelief to the rescue. In disbelief to the rescue. Responds in disbelief to the rescue. But wireless history was made and quickly forgot. First saving that ship, SS Mini Haha. Finish with this. God's gable end. Lump hammers and chisels ring in the moonlight. Bold Norman commission removed in one chunk. Improper, Monsignor. shedding scant lichen, should never be mounted on God's gable end. Love to the causeway, while crickets are rasping, dumped in the seaway, don't utter a word. Oh no, gasped the mermaid, sheeling a gig, shiver my lumbers, who ordained this? Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chad. I just actually heard that Mr. Jerry Murphy remembered one of his poems and would like to actually come back up to the microphone. Thank you, Jerry.
This is just to welcome April to Cork. It's called Oedipus in Harlem. Yo, motherfucker.
Thank you, Jerry. Next up to the microphone, could we please have Mr. Paul O'Mahony.
This is a very raw poem. It's so raw that it hasn't yet been typed. It's called I Have Lost My Stone. I have lost my stone, the one I picked on Inchidani Beach, the day you went away in the tide. It sat in the corner of a weathered coat, the right hand of a pocket I wore to every funeral. I would not go to a grave without it between my fingers. It was the shape of your face, creviced where the sockets of your eyes had been, smooth as cheeks I caressed you daily. That was my teardrop, the one I could not shed, and now you have left me empty-handed.
I did bring something more cheerful, but I was caught by the miscalculation, and I can't actually recite anything from memory. And I certainly couldn't recite this one from memory. I met a guy in Listowel whose name was James McGrath. He lived in Santa Fe. And you know how you meet somebody who writes and you feel like giving up? So when I met James and I read his stuff, I thought I really had no business writing. So I did what everybody else does when they have no business writing. I was blocked. So I wrote this to get the that wonderful fucker out of my mind. It's called The Poet of the Shopping Centre. I am the poet of Douglas Village Shopping Centre, who prowls a walkway from boutique to supermarket, sits for coffee and mockery in the olive tree, carries a super value bag for life. I am the writer of the shells, a fairy queen, who casts a cold eye over cereal packets and baked beans, searching for the lowest available unit price and a sell-by date for his addiction. I am those sandaled feet underneath a hemp hat from Nepal. Feet that dance past caged rabbits and hamsters. Eyes that look at passers-by and day by day see them lose their awe. I wish I wasn't the bloke looking in Linda's lingerie window, a fella admiring the next door wedding dress, says. After a weekly visit to Macaulay's pharmacy, a familiar face inside the public library. The poet of the shopping centre had his digital photograph taken under the influence of writer's block. He chatted with Mr. Cremin, the butcher, about a holiday in Christchurch and the price of liver. The management of the centre is looking for a rhyming couplet to celebrate the indefinable lightness of being here, now, in the moment of indecision before purchase of a second shopping bag. I am that hand steeped in boutique sand, vast trunkless legs stretch away beyond despond. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Next up to the microphone, could you please have Helen Ronan Kavanagh? But that's the wrong way around. Helen Kavanagh Ronan. My apologies. Sorry, Helen.
This was written because I was inspired by a quote by Jean-Paul Sartre. So it's called, "We are alone, without excuses, condemned to be free." Look within the golden frame, once an aesthetic container of bygone youth. Soft-faced, baby-haired blondes gathered, waiting for innocent escape through adulthood. It's holding pain of long ago. It'll have to go. Family gone. That wall needs no nostalgia for purpose of enclosing, confining life to a time in point where sadness and uncertainty curved smile other way around. It's making me frown, knock it down, house gone. Smell the heavy classics, speckled wood-like stained with cocktail of dust, coffee, thyme and wine. Following, pulling me behind. We'll learn fresh-aired words next time. Stop dragging me back. Book's gone. Hear the colour of banknotes lurking, luring plastic pin towards release link, providing purse power and materialistic chink for societal integration in green-backed nation. Give it all away. It's only causing me pain. Bank account gone. Grow old with all the learning, a lesson too late. Die the education debt. Literature, language, philosophy, life. Needing to be equipped for CV distribution and rejection. From intellects lower who cling to order and claw on hope of retirement plan. Don't call me, I'll call you. 9 to 5 would only make me bland. Job gone. Cry on soaked pillow as yet another physical joy fizzles towards fiasco. Uncorking, unleashing, marking a freedom path to nowhere. Release the boy. Love gone. We are alone without excuses, condemned to be free. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Helen, for that. Right, before we've got one more guest before we close off the second part of the evening and go on to the fun challenge part. So, last but not least, to give us a bit of music from his own hand, I'm sure, Mr. Finn Barra.
This is a song I wrote about, I think, that the gift of being able to write. really. And it's a song I called Burning Sliver.
Despise the sin, but love the sinner. It's the soundest of philosophies. And despise the road that takes the pariah, but love him right down to his fleas. All that's certain in life are taxes and debt. So take all your dreams and put them in your net. And take to the mountains and sip from the streams. And don't let the magpies steal your dreams. Our bodies are like tabernacles. They hold the host of our hopes. Though I hear the rattle of fetters and shackles, and I may fall spent on the ropes. All that's certain in life are taxes and debt. So take all your dreams and put them in your net. And take to the mountains and sip from the streams. And don't let the magpie steal your dreams. The spark is slight, but it's divine and worthy of all sacrifice. And that little light is more potent than wine. It's a burning sliver of delight. All that's certain in life are taxes and debt. So take all your dreams and put them in your net. And take to the mountains and sip from the streams. And don't let the magpies steal.